You're listening to The Food Talk Show. It's The Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Good afternoon, Sue. How are you?
Yeah, hi, Paul. I'm feeling a bit smug, actually.
Smug?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you smug?
Yeah, I've got a sort of smug face on.
Smug? I like
it. A bit of smug face
Why
on.
Are you smug, Sue?
Because I managed to get an interview with one of my food heroes.
Really?
Yeah, that I've respected for a long, long time, and that's Craig Sands of Green and Black.
I was going to say, I'll bet it's chocolate related.
Well, I'm not a great fan of chocolate, but I do like very, very good chocolate. But the reason why Craig Sands is a hero for me is that he was there way before everybody else.
Yeah, sure.
And so committed to sustainability. So we can talk about that later when we do the interview. Well, I'll play you the interview towards the end, but I was just really chuffed, and he's such a really, really nice guy.
Right.
He's lovely. I'm slightly in love with him.
You're excited about this,
yeah,
I can tell.
You're
really made up for this. And we've got some really, because we were just talking off air about some of the other interviews we got today, and we were running through some of them, and there's quite a bit of exciting stuff going on there, isn't there?
There is. We went to Food Matters Live, which is still on today, actually. It's the last day today.
Right.
And Food Matters Live is huge, and there's all sorts of amazing speakers there. So you get Raymond Blanc speaking. And Lord Winston and a lot of government people and professors and, you know, lots of boffins talking about food in, you know, in a very scientific way and, you know, obesity and children. And it's a really fascinating stuff. So I was there on Tuesday and Wednesday. And there's a couple of really nice interviews that I've got for you, Paul.
Right.
And my favourite is the guys who do truffles.
Truffles,
not chocolate truffles, like the truffles under the ground.
Fungi
truffles.
Yeah. Are they fungi truffles? They are fungi.
Yeah,
aren't
it must
they?
Be. Yeah, and so that's was fascinating. So that was that. But to start with, I was talking to Rick Hay, and he's called the superfoodist.
And
he has people like, I don't know, actresses and people who you know he advises, and he really looks about nutrition and the sort of tips that you need to make your food more enjoyable and to keep you on straight and narrow if you're trying to eat healthily.
Okay.
So we've got some great tips from him. And then a lovely lady called Kate Percy, and she's developed these, her husband was going to run the marathon, I think, London Marathon or something, and she was trying to, you know, make him food beforehand to make his sporting performance
giving
better.
Giving him sandwiches
like,
to take.
Just like you, Paul. You know, I know you like, you know, your sporting performance is important.
Yeah.
And she came up with this sort of nutritious stuff that she's been doing. So both of them are talking about how to eat if you want to, you know, be much better at sport.
Right.
And they've done a lot of research. So
fantastic.
I don't know if you want to listen to that first, but it's if anybody is looking at that, you know, to make them better at sport, it's fascinating.
Absolutely. So it can make me kick straight.
Yeah, or you know, maybe I don't know, Manchester United might need a bit of help on that at the moment, or some of those football teams that aren't doing quite so well, maybe they should be talking to Rick and Kate.
Absolutely. Cool. Should we have a listen to them? Let's do that.
I'm at Food Matters Live with my producer Lucy Ellis, and we've been wandering around, and we've come across Rick Hay, who I've heard of before. And Rick is, he calls himself the superfoodist, and he's just given me his book here, and he's obviously given it to me because I'm getting on a bit, and it's called The Anti-Aging Food and Fitness Plan. I'm having a really good look through here, and there's things like, he's got lots of amazing recipes, there's things like the natural facelift. You're nodding, Lucy, because you think I need that, don't you? Thank you for that. And all sorts of things here. And we've got some, there's lots and lots and lots of seminars here. There's lots of government people and nutritionists and professors and researchers. They're all chatting a lot. They all seem to be talking about calories, which really winds me up. I'm not an expert on this. You've got actual opinions on the sort of what I would call the calorie myth, haven't you, Rick?
Yeah, I think we agree on that one, actually, because it is a bit of a myth, or more than a bit of a myth. I think it's, you know, a calorie is how fast a food burns in a lab and not in your individual bodies compared to your, you know, your state of well-being, your metabolism, your stress levels, etc. So I try not to talk about calories. I talk about nutrient density, nice, healthy whole foods, and as I say, not making food difficult. I think it's been made way too difficult, and women in particular spend their whole lives counting calories.
it's all bloody complicated, isn't it? I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. So Rick, what you do is you're a nutritionist. You know, you're an expert nutritionist, and a bit like a personal trainer, you'll come and advise people on that sort of stuff. So individuals as well as companies. Explain to me what you mean by nutrition.
Well, it's the goodness that we get from our food and what we can get in terms of vitamins and minerals and what we can get in terms of fiber, etc. So nutrition is food, but all the things in it. And for those people out there who think that nutrition doesn't matter, I always say to them, well, think about if you've overindulged, and I'm not encouraging people to do that, although it's good to celebrate, but if you've overindulged or, you know, you've overindulged with either alcohol or food, you don't feel great the next day. If you get good nutrition into your life, most of the time, not all the time, most of the time, you're going to get the benefits because biochemically the body takes up all those micronutrients. And at a cellular level, that's important. So good nutrition, living nutrition is going to get you good results.
So tell me what a sort of good day would be for you nutritionally. I mean, obviously you're the paragon of virtue. I mean, I'd really try hard to do probably 80% of what I eat. I try to be, you know, really good food. And you can't be good all the time. And I think if you allow yourself just that little bit of naughtiness, it's actually easier to stick to, actually. But what's a good nutritional day for you?
Well, first of all, I'm a bit similar to you, even though I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not what you'd call in the perfect bracket. I'm not going to just have six chickpeas and some water, you know, and spices for lunch. I try.
You look far too happy for that.
Yeah, and you know what? You touched on something very important before. I will answer the question. I always go round and round in circles. But if you are stressed out about food all the time, your adrenal glands get overloaded, you produce adrenaline, you produce cortisol, it's not a good state for the body. So if you want sometimes to have that treat, have it for goodness sake. But if you're, you know, maybe verging on obese or something, you have to look at having it less. But for most of us, that's not such an issue. And a little treat makes us happy and happiness is important. But my day generally starts with something really colourful because it's all about colours. I got to study with a wonderful biochemist in Australia when I studied my nutrition, and for people out there who think that when we study nutrition we don't do our levels of you know, chemistry and phytochemistry, we do. I'm looking at the phytonutrients in the food, I meant. So he always said to me, coloured foods are some of the best things for your immune system. So I've done that for years. So I might have a berry smoothie, you know, and I am going to be stereotypical here. I probably have some spinach in there, but then I'll mix it with the fruit, so the glycemic load is level.
See, that's very helpful. That's very healthy, and as you say, it's colourful. The problem I have with something like a bowl of porridge is it makes me feel a little bit downless because of the colour. So if you like porridge, you probably need to add something a bit colourful. Actually, I didn't really think of that. Good idea.
Yeah, but pop the berries in there, and porridge is fabulous because it's going to sustain your glycemic load all through the day, keep you steady, and give you B vitamins. So think colours all the time. If you just have a plain porridge, maybe then have a beetroot juice with it or something. And then mid-morning, I'm not of the school of thought that you have to starve yourself all day. If you're feeling hungry, I think you're doing something wrong. Starving. So what I do is I have a mid-morning, I might have some fruit and, depending on my mood, some coconut yogurt, or I might have a healthy nut bar. And you need to be careful, not one that's, you know, packed full of rubbish, yeah, and sugar, artificial flavours. That'll take me to lunch, and if I'm on the go, I'll just have a sandwich, and it's fine. I know people out there will be thinking, oh, goodness, you're having bread, and it's got wheat in it, and oh, no, but it's convenient, it's fast, and if I'm at home, I might whip up a stir-fry, a very fast one. And again, you know, I always like to have some plant-based protein, because I'm a big fan of it, more so than going too heavy on meat. So I might have, like, tofu, cashew nut, stir-fry, you know, something that's fast. And I tell you what, coming into winter, best thing you can do, soup. Grab soup. Perfect weight management.
Homemade soup. I mean, you can't get better than that. And Lucy and I have just been over to see the bone broth man.
Oh, God. And that would make the perfect base for a soup,
which is
it?
Great. And he gets all organic bones, beef bones and stuff like that. And the broth that he has is organic and it's great. And for me, just heat that up and then throw loads of bean shoots and bits of noodles and goodness knows what else, you know, coriander. And it's about, I think it's about cooking from scratch. If you can recognise, isn't it somebody said if your grandparents can't recognise it as food, it's not food, sort of thing. And just get stuff from scratch.
And that other thing, if you can't pronounce it, well, except for maybe some of the foreign foods, but if you can't pronounce the ingredient, then sometimes be a bit wary, you know. And then you know what's going into your body. That's why I love, you know when everybody said about the trend of superfoods, and then when we had all these blenders come out a couple of years ago, and everyone was saying to me, look, aren't you just, you know, jumping on a bandwagon? I'm like, no, what I'm doing is I'm delivering nutrient density to people. That's what it's all been about. And so I love the idea that you could whack, you know, some vegetables in there, put your stock in there, blend it up, have it done. It's all done within, you know, 10 minutes. And for those of you out there who are thinking that cooking from scratch has to be long and arduous, my stir fries, really, they take me 10 minutes. It's not a long time. And as you touched on, we then know what's in it. And when we know what's in it, you know, if you want to put rubbish in there, then it's your choice. But a lot of time you've got a lot of hidden additives, a lot of stuff in there that's not great.
I mean, the thing I find is Paul, who normally co-presents the show with me, eats a lot of takeaways and eats a lot of fast food. The problem I find with that is I actually do think it's addictive. I think the levels of salt in them and the sugar, so that once you've had one, and you will crave another one within a few days. And actually, it's, for me, it's like a sort of wheel that you get yourself on, and you're running around like a hamster on this stuff. To try and cut that out, but actually, if you want a hamburger, then make one, you know, or find one that's really, really, you know, got loads and loads of great ingredients in. But resorting to fast food, it's got so many additives, and I'm convinced that once you get on that, it's really difficult to get off.
I think you're spot on, and we actually don't know what they all do when they combine together. There's testing done on individual ones, and sometimes I don't think that's rigorous enough anyway. You know, your body can handle a little bit, but over time, all the time, and I think you're right, I think there's something there that gets us caught into a cycle. And that's why, you know, a lot of my clients, if they have to, for whatever reason, give up bread, for they might have a skin condition, I want them to give it up for 2 weeks. Not forever, but just for a short time. Unless they've got something like celiac or something, and we need to be tested for that, not diagnose ourselves. Then we, you know, once they give up the bread, then if after about a week they say to me, you know what, I'm not craving it anymore. Especially if it was store-bought bread that's sort of got lots of stuff in it. So once you take that healthier step, I think the body intuitively tries to guide you in the right way. If it doesn't, I think what's happening is you're getting so much sugar, your poor pancreas is releasing insulin all over the place, and you know, everything's got glycemic load going up and down. And so what ends up happening is when the blood sugar levels are out, the body will just go for a quick fix, and that quick fix is more sugar, more caffeine, more things to make me fast. And that's not necessarily great for your health. That'll keep you going, it won't make you healthy. Most of my clients, if I ask them, what's your healthy score out of 10, and particular in, you know, in London, where they're very busy, or the major cities, most of them won't come in above a 6, and they think that's all right.
And so that's them self-diagnosing and saying, how do I feel today? Oh, about 6 out of 10. Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, and then they say, and that's okay. And I say to them, well, it's not okay. You don't have to be a 10. It's like, you don't have to be happy all the time, opposite of sad. That's, you know, I think you should be content most of the time. But if I can get them to an 8, you know, because often there's other circumstances like life and work where, you know, they've got to be bad nutritionally sometimes, but if I get to the 8, that difference is quite phenomenal. That could be the difference from the not exercising to exercising. That's been the difference actually in the past, where some of my clients, and I do quite a lot of exercise because I have to in my job and I love it, but they're the ones who go on and run a half marathon. I haven't run one. And, you know, it can change a lot. So
certainly won't be getting me running one, that's for sure. Don't mind going in the gym, but women are not supposed to run. We are not food anymore, that's what I think. So we don't have to run anymore, Rick. But okay, so just one simple piece of advice for somebody who may be on a little bit of a merry-go-round in terms of their dieting and maybe feeling 5 out of 10 or 6 out of 10. One really good piece of advice to start on the road of getting high nutrition.
So all we're going to do is do one healthy thing a day. And that healthy thing could be that healthier breakfast. So add some fruit into your porridge, ditch the cereal, get away from the toast, maybe go for, you know, scrambled eggs for the protein option. So one healthy thing. And even that's including your soup. Try to, you know, if you can't make one, or you've got no time to make one, buy a healthier version from a decent store. Or start on some exercise. Now, if you just do that one small thing every day, it's much better than trying to change the whole thing. And in fact, one big section in my book is about tune-up, because I don't actually do a lot on detox, because the body's detoxing every day. If it wasn't, we all wouldn't be here. But what we can do is tune it up slowly, and by making that one change, I think you'll get a lot more energy. And think, if a whole meal is too much, just try to think of some more coloured foods. And you could buy maybe some supplements like wheatgrass, barley grass, You know, I really love plant-based proteins, all of those sorts of things. And if you're feeling really down, consider a multivitamin, multimineral, because it's amazing. I've done a lot of research into that. A few years ago, I was doing things mostly with food. And then the recent research coming out took me a little bit back to vitamins, good vitamins, quality vitamins, because it's sometimes we're deficient in D or K2 or B12 or whatever, and iron. And if we're deficient, we're not going to be at our best. So if you get a nice multivitamin mineral, then that's going to help you along your way as well.
Okay, well, that's very good advice. I think we are unrealistic, aren't we, as human beings? So we say, right, that's it, especially with the New Year's Eve coming up, you know, in the new year, I'm going to lose 2 stone in a month. And that's just unrealistic, and you're going to fail. So your advice is, if you want to start on this path, do some small things first, and you're much more likely to succeed. So Rick Hay, the superfoodist, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
So I'm with Lucy Ellis, who's the producer, and Lucy's got a little boy called Jamie, and I've had two little girls. They're not little anymore, of course. They left me ages ago, and they live in London. But I was always very conscious when they were little about, you know, trying to feed them the right thing, not make them so that they weren't allowed to have the odd bit of fast food, because otherwise I think they get hung up on it. But was really trying then to watch what they were eating. I guess you're doing the same, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly the same. I mean, obviously he's allowed the odd takeaway, but I just think it's important that he has good home-cooked foods, so no jars, things that can easily be made at home. So that's what I'm really concentrating on, that he has some just good nutritional...
All these pressures as a mum, hey? Honestly, we're all trying to be Gwyneth Paltrow. Yeah, exactly. I've got Kate Percy with me, and she's author of a highly acclaimed book called Go Faster Food, and she's now done a Go Faster Food for Kids. And I know that you got really interested, Kate, in when your husband was preparing to run a marathon and being absolutely knackered while he was doing it. Trying to work out if there was some way in which you could deliver some food at home that would really help in terms of sporting ability, you know, to highlight, you know, or sort of improve your sporting ability. What did you learn when you first did that? I mean, because you couldn't just buy stuff, could you, that would help you to run a marathon?
No, the main thing that came out of it was discovering about the glycemic index and how not all carbs were the same, and some of them were actually really good for you. So I changed the diet to focus more on low to medium glycemic index foods, and actually his training just, well, it was an epiphany. And yeah, that's where Go Faster Food was born, really.
Yeah. So tell us what the glycemic index is. And because when you're an athlete, that they always used to say, well, this is ages ago, you've got to do carbo loading, love. You've got to do a bit of carbo loading if you're you know, training and all that, which meant just eat loads of potatoes and spaghetti and things. But it's a bit more sophisticated now. What's the glycemic index?
So it's a way of evaluating the speed at which glucose is released into your bloodstream. So if a food has a glycemic index of 100, well, that's pure glucose. Mm-hmm. That means that it will be released really, really, really quickly into your bloodstream. And then you go down on the rankings till you get to something like, for instance, oats, which have a glycemic index of 40. And that's you're getting a much more sustained, gradual release of the sugars into your bloodstream. So that's why everyone eats porridge in the morning, to keep them going till lunchtime.
And by keeping going, we mean that because you've got that slow release of sugar into your body, you're not feeling hungry, or you've still got energy.
Yeah, it regulates your blood sugars. You've still got energy, and you're not hungry. So it's a win-win situation. Yes.
So clearly, your husband then won the New York Marathon. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. Actually, he did come second in his age group in the swim of the Windsor Triathlon.
Must be good stuff. So you started making this stuff at home, and then you've gone even further now, haven't you?
Well, yes. So I run a schools program, which is kind of come out of the Go Faster Food for Kids and all the work with kids. And in the schools program, we what's called an Eat Like an Athlete program. So we use sport as a hook to get kids interested in what they put in their bodies. So we're combining sport with healthy eating, but we don't use the word healthy, because they you go in and you say we're going to talk about healthy eating, and if they're over 10 years old they go so we use sport
because they don't want to be seen as being sort of, you know, geeky or square or whatever the word is now. So you've got to be really careful about how you frame this stuff.
Exactly, that's right. So we go into schools and we carry out workshops, and what I find is with kids, if they are cooking, if they're making stuff, they're so much more interested in nutrition. So we make energy balls. We make these Dayton coconut energy balls and another energy ball recipe out of the book, which is an apricot and seed one. And they're so popular. And we thought, well, let's make them into a product. So we found a manufacturer and, yeah, we're just about to launch Go Bites now.
So we've got Go Bites and we've got these in front of us. Do you want to describe this packaging, Lucy? So I know you're still trialling your packaging, but Go Bites, they almost look like chocolate truffles, don't they?
Yeah, they look really nice. This one, it's the purple Go Bites Recover. We've got the Boost and we've got the Refuel. I really like the way it's put into those terms. Yeah. It just makes it a bit more appealing, I think. But yeah, so I'm dying to try one.
Well, go on then, open the packet.
What would you recommend? This one's Boost. So this is so it's gluten-free, it's vegan, it's literally just dates and coconut and gluten-free oats. A little bit of coconut oil.
Lucy pathetically can't get the package open, so she's having to get Kate to help her. Right, go on then. Taste one.
Would you like one as well?
I suppose I ought to, wouldn't I, really?
But I was going to give you
And so this, talking with my mouth full, is very bad manners. But so specifically, the date and coconut one is designed to do what?
So that is, it's really good if you, for instance, want to go for a run in the morning, which I'm sure you always do, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Ha ha! I was in the gym this morning. Kate, you don't. I know, looking at me, you don't believe me, but I did. Not only did I do an hour in the gym this morning, I had a swim as well.
I'm seriously impressed. That's amazing. I didn't. But if you haven't got time for breakfast in the morning, one or two of these really just gives you enough enough energy to keep you going through that hour's worth of exercise. They're kind of between 45 and 50 calories a ball. So it's just enough to keep you going for a bit.
I don't believe in calories. I believe in what's in them. But exactly. They taste really nice, really moist, actually, which I didn't expect.
Yeah, I was kind of, because I've tried things like this before, you expect sort of quite a dry ball type thing, but really moist and really, really tasty. Like, I know my son, he's very fussy, but I think he'd happily munch away on those at breakfast.
So in terms of the future for Go Bites, what's your plans for the company?
So we have, we're launching with these three varieties at the moment. We want to expand that to 9 varieties under the Boost, Refuel, Recover theme. So we'll have 6 new flavours, basically. We will then go into other products. Obviously, if I told you, I would have to kill you. the great thing about this is that there's the cross promotion with the books. So we've got a new version of Go Faster Food coming out next year. We've got a bit of a publishing program going on next year, in fact. So 2017.
So if anybody's listening, it's gofasterfood.com, and if you want to look for the book, because it's a really popular book, it's called Go Faster Food, and it's got over 100 energy boosting recipes if you're a runner or a cyclist or a swimmer or a rower. So look out for that, and best of luck with it, Kate.
Oh, thank you. Thanks very much.
You see, if you're a runner, a cyclist, a rower, just described you, Paul.
I didn't know you were a gym bunny.
I am a gym bunny.
You're a gym bunny.
I like going to the gym. My gym's really quiet because it's like a bit old fashioned. There's nobody there.
Right. Okay.
So I don't mind looking a bit gross in the morning and going to the gym. But it's a really interesting area, and she's written a really nice book, which she couldn't believe it when she published it. It's you know, just shot off the shelves. So
yeah.
Go Faster Food, really interesting, and looking at nutrition for people who specifically want to do particular sports. So.
And I like the idea of breakfast balls as well.
Yeah, and they're actually nice. They're actually really nice. Yeah, yeah, they are. They're good.
Mm.
So
once you can get the packet open, obviously.
Yeah, well, obviously Lucy couldn't manage that.
Lucy's not a gym bunny.
No, clearly. The next interview was brilliant. These guys from...
You were really made up with this. I know you are.
These guys from the Truffles Company.
Right.
It's a new company, and it's based in Serbia. And
right,
quite a lot of people associate truffles with like Italy and places like that. Mm. So they've got these truffles in Serbia. They bought these three truffles, which are like the size of cricket balls, onto the stand that we like a radio pod that we have. Mm. And the smell was so intoxicating. I felt drugged.
Really?
Yeah, it's like some hallucinogenic stuff.
So describe a raw truffle to me. It's about the size of a cricket ball, you say?
Well, no. Basically, they send out dogs or pigs, you know, to go and sniff them out. And they could be, they could be size of a small, you know, hazelnut. Or if you're very lucky, you'll get one that's really grown, you know, really grown quite big. And they're very, very, very expensive. I mean, hugely expensive. So obviously, you know, they're really keen on finding the bigger ones.
And what does it look like?
It depends. Some of them are black.
Yeah.
And they almost look like they've got little craters on.
Right, okay.
The ones these guys had almost... Do you know what celeriac looks like?
Yes,
Paul?
Yeah.
They look like small celeriac. Not quite as gnarly, but a little bit like that.
Oh, okay.
And, the smell, though, is absolutely fabulous. It was really fabulous.
Hallucinogenic.
We felt a little bit high.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's definitely worth listening to this. And they were such nice guys as well. And they've got a chap called Dave who arrived in his kilt for the interview. Yeah, so he's in his kilt.
His truffle hunting kilt.
And he's got Chef White's on at the top, and then he's got his kilt. And he works with the Truffle Company, but he's also a development chef for somebody called Little Pod,
right?
Which get real vanilla. So this sounds like a bit of an odd interview, but basically we talk about truffles at the beginning, and then we end up talking about vanilla.
Vanilla, I like vanilla as well. Vanilla
this
pods.
Is great.
Should we have a listen?
Yes, please.
Let's do that.
I'm sitting at in the radio pod with Lucy, and we've got huge truffles in front of us. Massive, gnarly, big truffles. What is the smell like?
Absolutely amazing. I've never smelled any... Well, I've smelled truffles before, obviously, but never this strong and amazing.
It's pungent. That's the only way you can describe it. And it's so distinctive. It can't be anything else.
No, it's just... I had truffle chips once, cheesy truffle chips, which...
That's not McDonald's, is it?
No. That's my posh version. And I was really looking forward to it. And I'll never forget that smell. It was nothing like this smell. It was like a fake truffle smell. I don't know if there is such a thing, but it was nothing at all like this. This is amazing.
So I've got in front of me Tibor Streich, I think his name is, and I've got Dave Buchanan, and they're from the Truffles Company. We've got three truffles in front of us. Tibor, how much would one of those truffles cost for me to buy?
It's depending on the class, and the classes are equally weight, so we have three kind of classes, and an extra class, and then everything above this extra class is called Joker, and this is then based on an auction, so you can buy it only on an auction. So its price range for the white truffles is from 3,000 euros up to 9,000 euros per kilogram.
So I've got three in front of me, and if I was to say, right, I want to buy those off you, Tibor, how much would I have to get out of my pocket?
I think in front of us we have around, David, 150 or something like this.
Yeah, it's probably about 150, 200 grams. The actual container here has a lot more, but these are three of the best and the biggest samples we've got here. So, yeah, you wouldn't be getting much change there out of upwards of best part of 1,000 euros, I would say, probably.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Get them in
shapes,
your pocket. Oh, no, they're amazing.
I'm
shapes.
Guarding them.
You're guarding them, yes. Guard them with your life. Get Jeremy to be the security guard on this one. Dave, tell me about truffles. Tell me about the history of truffles and how you get the best truffles.
Well, the best truffles, essentially, like a lot of food products, the best ones are the freshest ones. When people buy truffles, generally, what they're probably buying is a low-grade product that's probably been frozen or somehow processed or treated, whether it's been brined or pickled or something. So one of the simple things to check is, we've already discussed, is this intoxicating aroma that emanates from them. I think it's about 100 and 120 individual organic compounds that go up to make the smell, that combine to make the smell of what we know as truffle. So that's one of the most important things, is obviously for them to be fresh, and also for them to be quite hard. So if you feel these ones, they've got the sort of texture maybe of a cricket ball or something quite substantial. I mean, if you threw that hard enough, I'm certain you could upset somebody. So those are the two main characteristics. They do come from many parts of Central Europe. They are also cultivating them in the UK, Portugal. Serbia is kind of the hidden gem of the truffle world. And what we want to try and do is create a demand for exceptional quality truffles and exceptional quality truffle products. But we do it in a very sustainable and environmentally responsible way. So there are commercial farms available in Italy and all other parts of the world. But they grow them to cultivate them, and they don't really care. It's all about making money. We're all about working with nature, harvesting the truffles and then putting the tree back to the best of our ability so that it's relatively undisturbed, working in synergy with your environment, so that if you look after it a little bit more this year, next year you get to reap the rewards again. So that's kind of the theory.
And Tibor, who do you sell to? Is it sort of rich individuals to come along and say, "Give me a £400 truffle, please," or is it restaurants? Who do you market to?
To be honest, we are a startup company, so this is one of our first visits to outside of Serbia. But of course, anyone who likes, first of all, the truffles and the smell of the truffles and the taste, these are our clients. It's not always about money and making money, so we want also to educate the people that Serbia is a country where you can buy very qualitative products. And for sure, we would like to have one or two rich clients, but it's not only about that. So also, David is a person who is teaching me a lot about truffles and how to prepare them. And this is also another aspect of how we want to grow, to teach people to use them, how to use them to make beautiful recipes and to eat them in a very nice environment.
Tibor's set you up beautifully there, Dave. So tell me, I've got a big truffle there in front of me. What is the best way to prepare a truffle? I mean, if you're looking at them, they almost look like tiny celeriac, don't they? There's a bit knobbly, gnarly, that sort of colour. Tell me your favourite recipe.
So the best way to use a truffle actually is in the most simplistic way. People think generally, from having seen them on TV shows, Saturday morning cookery shows and such like, it comes in oil and in butter and you just throw it in the pan and you cook it and you do all of this. If you've gone and spent €9,000 a kilo on this stuff, that's the worst thing that you can do to them.
Yeah, why put it in oil? That's bonkers, isn't it?
It's one of those things. It's the sort of thing that we end up doing once the truffle has kind of begun to dehydrate, and it will actually start to break down, because obviously this grows under the ground, so it's not exposed to light until you actually begin to hunt for it with the dog and actually take it out of the ground. So from that moment, the clock is ticking downward, and it might be worth €9,000 a kilo today. But if you've got it in 6 weeks' time, when it's mouldy and it's dehydrated, it's essentially worthless. So what we try and do is we try and create retail products for the lesser classifications of the truffle. So the things that don't look so pretty, we can process them into salt and into oil and into honey and such like.
Because truffle oil is lovely, but what you're saying is that's your sort of offcuts almost in a way, and that's a sort of lower grade. But it's still lovely, isn't it? But
absolutely. What we also try and do is try to educate people. So the simplest thing to do is actually to just grate it or to shave it on the top of food. So it's traditionally at this kind of time of year, mostly Italian restaurants. Alba in Italy is a region that's very, very famous for selling its white truffles. And what you'll do is you'll go to a top-end restaurant, normally with a Michelin star, possibly two or three, and you go there and they bring a little scales out on the table, and there's pomp and ceremony. And there's a guy with gloves and someone holds a box and someone is... You're not not allowed to open the box because you're not old enough and you don't respect the truffle enough. There's this amazing kind of ritual that kind of goes along with it. So the scale gets zeroed, the truffle comes out and goes down, the food then comes out prepared by your Michelin star chef. You're probably spending hundreds of euros on your lunch or your dinner. You get the beautiful shaving, you know, as we've seen when we open the box, the aroma just absolutely fills the air. And then it's just shaved or microplane, just very, very finely across the top. You should essentially use it a little bit like a condiment. It's a little bit like a really, really rich ketchup, just kind of on the side, and has a little dip just every single time you have a bite. Just a tiny little piece is all you need. If it's a good quality one, you don't need a lot. When you see the chef on the TV and he's got the oil upside down for 5 minutes and there's 6 tablespoons in there, it's probably not very good truffle oil.
So grating it is the best. Grating it on pasta is obviously really good. Risottos and stuff like that, particularly risotto for me, it's a truffle on the top of that. Oh.
Absolutely, yeah. I guess like if like porcini mushroom risotto or something like that, and then just finished very, very last second, just nice and fine. But risotto, pasta, fish, steak, anything essentially, but just at the very, very last second, and then in front of the customer so that they get to encapsulate this beautiful aroma, and it basically evokes all of these memories of all the previous times where we've had truffles in our life, you know?
Which isn't that often, trust me. yes. Tibor, tell me about the dogs. So do you use dogs to find your truffles?
Yes, currently only dogs. There are also the story about the pigs, but it's very difficult to handle the pigs once they find the truffle. So we're... Yes.
If actually on the ground, you know, yeah, beating the pig up, trying to rescue the truffle out of his mouth. Yeah, I can see that's a bit of a problem.
So these are specific kind of dogs which are trained for finding truffles, and they're very nice, very cute, and they're very happy to find truffles. This is what I'm feeling when I see them. And we have a couple of them, and they're running around the woods, and once they see something, they start to dig, and that's it. That's the whole point. You also have to tell them to stop, and because we don't want to damage them or something like that. The pig is eating the truffle immediately, so you have to pull it back. So with the dogs, a little bit different, you know. And also as a reward, you give them a small piece of truffle. Sometimes they also like to eat the truffles like we do.
What spoiled dogs, yeah, are they?
How can I train my dog up?
What dog have you got?
I've got a Cocker Spaniel. Yeah. They're very good noses. So.
Well, we think they're absolutely amazing. Well, I'm just going to move on from truffles a little bit. I know, Dave, that you're here as well because you're the development chef for Little Pod. Mm-hmm. And I've got a really interesting... It actually looks like hair...
Like a hair serum.
Yeah, it looks like conditioner for my hair or something.
Janet, the lady that owns the company, says that these are cosmetics for the kitchen.
Wow, I'm liking that. Good bit of marketing. So in front of me, I've got something called Little Pod, and it's responsibly sourced, and it's natural vanilla paste, and it is the size of a normal tube of toothpaste, I would say. What's this product about?
So basically, Little Pod started around about 6.5 years ago, and the whole point of the company and their ethos and their brand value, which is probably what brings us to Food Matters Live, is that we are all about responsible sourcing, supporting young people, helping people attain apprenticeships, and the number of people that work for the company, despite Janet, the lady who owns it, being the oldest person, I think, that works in the company. I'm sure she won't mind me telling you that.
She's only 34, don't worry about it.
The combined ages of everybody else that works in the office is probably maybe 70, and there are 4 or 5 of them. So the whole thing for us is to promote the use of natural vanilla around the world, not necessarily our own, much to the dismay of her accountant, but Janet is so passionate in trying to help the growers and the farmers of this product, who get paid a relative pittance to produce this phenomenal foodstuff, which is, you know, famous the world over.
And it's from Madagascar. So Madagascar's famous for producing, you know, the best vanilla pods, isn't it? And if anybody has never seen a vanilla pod, it's almost like a really small, tiny banana, long and thin. And then when you split it open, you've got the seeds in there, and you scrape the seeds out, and that's what gives you the vanilla taste.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the most important things when we discuss flavour and taste perception, when we were discussing the truffle earlier, it has around about 110, 120 individual organic compounds that go up to make what we know as the smell of truffle. Vanilla has more than 500. It is very, very unique in the food world. And for years and years, scientists have tried to clone the vanilla orchid. When the actual pods begin to grow, the process of growing vanilla is around about 5 years to when it comes in this little container, or when the pod comes in a packet and when you buy it. So it's a very, very long, and it's a gradual process. And when the actual pods themselves, when the vanilla beans grow on the tree, they grow on the orchid, they actually look a little bit like green beans, and then they have to be picked at the right time, and then they're blanched like you would blanch vegetables, and then there's a very, very long, slow, gradual progression of dehydrating them and curing them. And basically, when we were discussing earlier, the best pods, you should be able to wrap them around your finger, and once you've let them go, they should spring back again. Most people that buy them out of the supermarket,
when I buy them, almost like licorice. I mean, they're so dried and so old, you split them open, and it's still nicer to do it that than get vanilla essence, in my opinion. But they're not great, are they?
Yeah, well, I mean, the reality is, if you use synthetic vanilla, it is around about 13 organic compounds, and the majority, 97% of the world's vanilla consumption is synthetic, and it's a petrochemical byproduct of the wood and paper industry. So it really isn't the sort of thing you really want to be putting in your body. So what the reason why we brought the paste out, we're the first company to bring the little pod paste or vanilla paste in a tube to market, and the whole point of it for us is making vanilla accessible for everybody. So if you've bought you see a recipe from a book that you get for Christmas, and you have to buy vanilla pods, and they're about £9 for two in Tesco, or the other supermarkets are available. You know, it's the sort of thing, it's quite a scary product to work with. This is an instant kind of quick fix. It's still made with the same pods that come from Madagascar, so it's not any lesser grade or anything like that, but it just makes it very easy for people to use. And for us, the message is about promoting the use of natural vanilla, natural products. As a chef, I don't like to use chemicals. I can't eat processed foods myself. They actually physically make me sick. But then I'm obviously 20 years of professional catering, so my experience of food is slightly different to others. But that's basically why we use this tube, to bring the product to a market, so that it's easy to use and everybody can use it.
And we've got a hashtag there for anybody that's into Twitter. So the hashtag is Campaign for Real Vanilla. So look out for this. It's a new product, Little Pod, and it's natural vanilla paste. Where will we be able to get that from? Have you got it into anywhere yet?
Currently, I think we export to about 53 countries around the world, but Hong Kong's a long way to go. So I'm certain that you can probably buy it in a great number of stores all over the UK. But something you can also do is go to their website, littlepod.co.uk, and buy directly. And also 10% of their online sales are donated to a charity who supports work in developing countries such as Madagascar. They work with communities to help them work with their environment. So rather than sort of deforest and grow palm oil for quick bucks to sell into American food industry, we actually teach them to fish within their limits and to be more sustainable. So we donate part of our online sales to that charity.
So littlepod.co.uk, definitely recommend that. And in terms of the truffles company, where can we find out more about what you do for your truffle company? Do you have a website yet?
Yes, we also have a website, www.thetrufflesco.rs, which stands for Serbia. And it's the first, let's say, step and the first phase of the website. Second phase is also what David mentioned before, that we will also sell the truffles online. Truffles will be collected every day, and it will be taken a picture of each and every truffle, and 360 degrees 3D technology. So this will be placed on the website, and people can see what they can buy. Yes. So this is the next step.
Well, I feel really heady. It's actually intoxicating.
I feel really happy.
It feels a bit druggy, doesn't it? I feel like I'm on a bit of a high, like some type of what they. I don't really understand drugs, but.
But I like this. I
yeah,
like this,
we've got some drugs for personal use here. I mean, God, they're amazing. So definitely recommend the Truffles Company. And so thank you to Tibor and both to Dave. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much for having us.
I couldn't really speak properly after that. It was really heady.
That was like a Timothy Leary interview.
They're unbelievable. And they just smelt amazing. And we were increasingly getting a bit sort of, a bit happy and hysterical towards the end of it.
Hippies.
Yeah, sure.
Do you know, it's really interesting. Truffles used to grow quite prolifically in the UK, in England.
Mm.
And in fact, even up until Queen Victoria, she was traditionally presented with a large truffle at the beginning of each truffle season. Vanishingly rare now.
Yeah.
Chap called Dr. Paul Thomas found one under a young Hollyoake tree back in Lincolnshire, and he spored them.
Mm.
And last year he got a crop.
Oh, that's really, really exciting.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. Really exciting. Mm-hmm. Well, they were great guys, but honestly, we had to go and have a coffee afterwards. We were struggling a bit.
And I have to say, I absolutely adore real good quality vanilla pods as well.
That's a really great product. And why would it not be in a tube? I mean, it's a really great way of doing it because it's fresh all the time and it keeps for a long time. And they're a lovely ethical company. Really good. Mm. Talking of ethics, this is my most exciting bit in the programme, although the truffles were quite exciting.
Well, it sounded like it.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, indeed. Craig Sams. So he's the founder of Whole Earth back in 1991. And he really is a pioneer and we use that too often, that phrase, but he really was back then. Organic food was his thing. And he was sent some organic cocoa beans. And from those, he made up a sample of some dark chocolate. He tasted it. He left it on his desk, half eaten. And his wife, Josephine, rocks up and she spots some unguarded chocolate because she's a bit keen on chocolate. And she stole it, and ate it. And she'd never tasted anything quite like it. And she just encouraged him to make more chocolate out of this. And that's how it started. And, it's a huge, huge brand. They quite liked having a something and something as a company name. They sort of quite like that. So they called it, there was no Mr. Green or there's no Mrs. Black, but what they decided to do was call it Green and Black because green symbolises the brand's ethical beliefs and black represents that intensity of the cocoa content of the chocolate.
Wow.
And that's how it all started. So Craig and his wife, Jo Fairley, set it up in 1991. And it's all sort of gone on from there. And he's been chairman of the Soil Association. And I think he's more or less sold the company now, more or less. But he runs an organic bakery in Hastings now.
Oh, wow.
He's just such a nice man. Mm. We're slightly running out of time, so we're going to have to listen to him straight away, Paul. Sorry about that.
Let's hear from Craig, shall we?
It's great.
It is my great pleasure to be joined by Craig Sams. And Craig is the joint sort of founder of Green and Blacks, which everybody probably in the world knows Green and Blacks. And certainly I eat Green and Blacks chocolate. And the company started in 1991. Craig, can you tell us a little bit about your story? You're a real icon in sort of fair trade food. How on earth did you start?
I started in 50 years ago in 1967 with a macrobiotic restaurant in business with my brother Gregory, and we started marketing branded foods like brown rice and millet and adduki beans and miso, which nobody had ever heard of before, in 1970. So throughout the 70s, we sold basically macrobiotic food, but a lot of it became commoditized. Everybody could get brown rice by the end of the 70s, whereas we were the only people who had proper organic brown rice.
Did people think you were mad, or do you just think you were just slightly ahead of the curve and you sort of saw that this was coming?
They thought we were either mad or bad. The American Medical Association thought we were, they called it the hippie death diet. I'm not dead yet, and I haven't been to a doctor for 50 years, so, there must be something in it. Foods like miso and seaweed and adduki beans and sesame seeds and tahini were pretty much unheard of then. Now everybody expects, gets quite grumpy if they don't find it at their corner store. So that's the big change. But it's been much slower than we expected. We thought, the penny dropped for me and my brother in a matter of days, and we stuck with it ever since. And it's always been a surprise that it takes people so long to break the food habits that they've grown up with. And, if they're bad habits,
There is a tipping point with these things, isn't there? Where you seem to spend ages and ages and ages and ages, and then all of a sudden it reaches a tip and then becomes mainstream. But that tail, if you like, took far longer than you thought. How did you move from there to chocolate?
Well, our most successful product ended up being Whole Earth peanut butter, and it's now Britain's number one peanut butter brand. We don't own it anymore, but it still gives us great pride to see our little baby is now bigger than Sunpat. It was while I was looking for peanuts, for peanut butter, that I came across farmers in Africa whose peanuts, sadly, although they were delicious and organic, there was a fault with them that meant we couldn't use them in our peanut butter. They had a mold residue in tiny quantities, but it was unacceptable. We found out they also grew cocoa beans, and I got a sample of 70% chocolate made up from those beans. My girlfriend, who became my wife some time later, went mad about it. She was a journalist and had written about chocolate and how, you know, those kind of articles you get in women's magazines that say, don't worry if your boyfriend chucks you over, there's always chocolate, you know, to keep you happy, and yeah, it's more reliable anyway.
And what sort of timing is this? Because, again, chocolate wasn't in any of the choices that we have now. So what sort of time frame was that?
It was 1991. People, at that stage, there were five big chocolate companies globally. All the smaller companies had been hoovered up and were consolidated into the oligopoly, if you like, that ruled the chocolate world. So the idea of an upstart company of any kind coming into that market was unthinkable. But we came in with something that nobody else had. And unlike other things where you innovate, to do organic chocolate, you have to find the farmers, you have to explain to them how to grow organically, you have to help them with inspection and certification, you've got to bridge the finance to enable them to get there. So the first serious competition we had was 4 years after we launched, and that was Lindt, who weren't organic and didn't taste as good. So we still had an advantage, and it wasn't really until the turn of the century that other people started to catch up, and by then we had an unassailable lead.
I guess you're an original disruptor of a market. Oh, lots of people talking about that now, aren't they? Disruption, we're going to disrupt a market. You actually did disrupt a market.
Well, that particular market. But I think what we've seen in general with beer, even with gin, with a lot of baking, that the scale does bring advantages in terms of profitability, but it also brings disadvantages in terms of flavor and quality, or it often can. And we could really concentrate on the flavor and quality end, and that's what gave us our edge. But yes, now there are bean-to-bar operations in the back of a shop that are producing really nice chocolate and with lots of distinctive character, and you can play around with it and try different flavors. In a way, even now, Green and Blacks is too big to do too much crazy innovation. It has to be, you know, before you launch a product, you have to be sure, if say an almond dark chocolate bar, you have to be sure that there are enough organic almonds out there to keep you going. Whereas at a smaller scale, you can make it, and if you run out of almonds, you just say, well, now we're doing a macadamia nut bar, and your customers just are quite happy with that.
And Craig, what do you think of the food sector at the moment? I mean, we're here today surrounded by loads and loads of innovative new companies. What's your thoughts on the sector?
I think it's the food sector got swallowed up by food technologists and accountants about 40 years ago. And what the accountants were driving for was the lowest possible price, and the lowest possible price is achieved by inflating your product with as much air and water as possible, because air and water are so much cheaper than other ingredients. What I see here and what I see across the food industry is a flight to quality, and it's manufacturers, even the big ones, you know, the Heinz's and Kraft's and Nestle's of this world, realize they've got to pull up their socks in that respect. And that the benefits that are going to follow through for people are dramatic. There are issues, though. People, I think, underestimate the impact of excessive coffee drinking, excessive antibiotic use, excessive painkiller use. All of these things start to influence your choices of food and quite often influence them in a negative way. So, you have to take a bigger holistic view about human health. Food is the foundation of health, but everything that we do in our lifestyle affects it as well.
And then just finally, if you were starting out now, looking at all the different areas of food that there are, obviously you've been in chocolate, where would you go now if you were starting out, a particular sort of area that really excites you?
I'm interested in drinks. I think that people, it's quite shocking when you realize how much sugar is in not just a can of Coca-Cola, but the equivalent quantity of apple juice or orange juice. And sugar is an issue that is not going to go away. It makes such a difference to all your other dietary choices. And my interest is really in finding ways of making palatable products, or would be in making palatable products, that satisfy that craving for sweetness without overdosing people on a food that is basically unbalancing to the rest of their metabolism.
And that's the big new food thrust for you, that this sort of, I mean, natural sugar, people are sort of worried about natural sugar as well as refined sugar, but that's the next big push for you.
And I think where that has taken me is towards sweeteners like inulin, which is extracted from Jerusalem artichokes and chicory roots and that sort of thing, which tastes not as sweet as sugar, so it kind of trains your taste buds not to be quite so sweet-oriented, but also doesn't affect your blood sugar metabolism and is absolutely lovely for the bifidobacteria and the other beneficial bacteria that reside in the gut. And we understand more about the human microbiome now than we ever have, just as we understand more about the biology of soil. But that inner soil in us, the large intestine, is where all the food we eat gets turned into what we are. And if you give those microbes, there's about 3 or 4 pounds of them, a couple of kilos in every person's gut, they're the ones that really decide how happy we are, how healthy we are, and how energetic we are. And so in organic farming, we say, feed the soil, let the soil feed the plants, which is the opposite of chemical fertilizers. With food, I think we're going towards feed the gut and let the gut feed your body.
Well, what an amazing piece of advice that is. You look a picture of health, you look a picture of happiness, and you look a picture of energy. So it must be working. Craig Sams from Green and Blacks, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
What a fantastic interview.
He's so knowledgeable. Mm. And you just, I'm literally a little bit in love with him because he just wants to listen to him because he is so knowledgeable.
This was smug central, this show, for you, wasn't
it? Was,
it?
Yeah.
It was,
truffles and,
it was three
and
or four of your most favourite interviews with some of your favourite people.
Yeah. But it was such a pleasure to interview him. You just want to listen to him because he knows so much.
Absolutely.
And he's been in the industry for so long and he's seen so many
such
things.
Such a gentle delivery as well.
And he's a real gentleman. Yeah. He's great. Yeah. So I've got smug face on this week.
And why not?
And why not?
Yeah,
and why not?
A little meal of truffles, vanilla, and organic chocolate.
Yeah.
And why not? Exactly. But some fascinating interviews and loads of interesting stuff going on there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, again, we were at Food Matters Live. Loads and loads of stuff about we really do need to look at what we're putting in our body.
Sure.
And I know people have been talking about it for a while, but it seems like a huge movement at the moment. And people are demanding that we, in the supermarkets and stuff, we've got a choice of stuff that's about nutrition, not just about chemically made things.
And everybody's now signed up to the fact that there's too much sugar in food.
Yeah, and too much of other rubbish, really. Yeah,
exactly. And we've got to start moving away from that and back to something far more healthy and organic and nutritious.
But at the right price that everybody
and
that, can
that's the
it.
Issue, isn't it? It's building that balance of how we do that. Yeah. And my belief is that can only happen with localism. You can't do massive farming and massive manufacturing and massive processing of foods and get quality.
Well, you probably can, but it probably costs too much, I think.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The
yeah,
issue.
Yeah,
so, yeah. But no, great programme, I think. Looking forward to next week.
Fantastic, yeah. Mm. So we'll be back next week with another food talk show.
I won't be quite so smug next week.
Oh, I'm sure we can find something for you to be smug about, yeah. But in the meantime, you can catch up with some of the podcasts and the recipes and all the stuff on the foodtalk.co.uk website, so do
Absolutely.
Check that out.
Yep, and we've got Fulton and Mason's next week. So
blimey.
I might be a little bit smug then.
So posh and smug. And
yes.
Why not?
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us on the Food Talk Show. You've been listening to me, Paul, and to the lovely Sue. And we'll be back with you at 4 p.m. next Thursday. Have a good week.
Goodbye.